Before we begin today's show, I have some important news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June the 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $94,000 by that date. The great news is generous friends of the ministry have offered a new $5,000 matching grant, which will double your gift today up to that amount. That's why I wanted to take just a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. I am delighted to be joined today by Jim Stockton, Emeritus Lecturer in Philosophy at Boise State University in Idaho. He's recently written a very exciting new book, The Oxford University Socratic Club, 1942 to 1972, A Life. We're going to be talking to Jim about his work, as well as sharing a paper and a workshop that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Jim's paper was Beside the Meetings, the Oxford University Socratic Club's Lesser Known Events. And the title of his workshop there was Research Opportunities and the Oxford University Socratic Club, 1942 to 1972. Jim, what is the legacy of the club? Because we've talked about some of the incredible people that were involved. We talked about some of the fascinating debates, but clearly a lot of what was talked about still lives on, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, my book is a history of the club, and it's very much in debt to biographical explanations as well as analysis of club members and what was going on. And I've thought about that a lot because I don't claim any sort of expertise. I'm not an Anscombe scholar. I'm not a Gilbert Ryle scholar. I'm not a Lewis scholar. You know, people ask me, oh, you must be a Lewis scholar. And I go, no, I'm not. And I'm not a Lewis biographer. I mean, I know people out there, like my friend, you know, Joel Heck, for example, but you know, I also, you know, have worked with Charlie Starr and met Michael Ward and Diane Glyer. Those people are experts in Lewis and the Inklings. I'm just an old instructor who can put things together well. And I like a big bucket of philosophical Legos. But I think the legacy of the club is that right in the middle of the 20th century, when we're going through a significant cultural change, and I've mentioned a lot of those cultural turns and changes in this conversation already, here's this club that's having these wonderful conversations and arguments and meetings about religious matters, about faith, about Christianity, and the role that it has in their culture, their society. And I think in order for to understand this time, I think looking at the Socratic Club gives you a good idea of the philosophical and the religious temperament of the day, and particularly so for those who are interested in British history, Oxford's history, the history of the university system as a whole, both in America and in Great Britain. So it's not a magnificent or large and overwhelming contribution by any means, but I do think it serves that purpose, that it gives us a glimpse of what it was like in the 1940s through the 1960s when it came to arguing about Christianity and philosophy and the debates that occurred between various peoples at the time. I like to think that I'm also making a credible contribution to the history of philosophy, because that's my discipline. But the odd thing about it, when I got to the end of my book, I realized that even though I'm not a, you know, Lewis scholar, I end up talking more at times about Lewis and his colleagues that agreed with him than I do about the counterargument to what they were saying. Now, I think if I were to go through it word for word or page for page, I talk more about the philosophers than I do Lewis and his friends. And that's just because most of the people that spoke at the club were philosophers, or again, philosophical theologians, which is, you know, I don't know if it's unique to Great Britain, but I do know that we don't have a lot of philosophical theologians in America.
Interesting. Yeah. Jim, why do you think that some of the Socratic club thinkers, such as Lewis, are still so, so relevant after, or for many of them, many years after their death?
I think they're more relevant in America than they are in Great Britain. I think the reason that they are as relevant as they are in America is we are still a nation that is grounded in religion and faith. I think we still, most Americans still identify as being Christians. I think, and I'm gratefully so, that there's much more of a blend of faith in America. I think that's healthy for society. I think that there's more of an interest in religious argument and religious philosophy and theology at American universities than you might find elsewhere. But I do think even in the British institutions that there's still enough of an interest that they shouldn't turn away from it. And there actually was a call to turn away from philosophical theology and philosophy of religion during the 20th century. Now, I've had people say to me who are interested in writing about the Socratic Club, and I know a couple of them are waiting for my book to come out so they can take what I write and then start writing their book, which I hope happens. I really do hope a couple of people argue against me. It's kind of what makes things rich and fun. But they like to think, though, the Socratic Club was a factor in saving Christianity from the atheistic, you know, claws of the dark side of philosophy. And I'm being sarcastic and exaggerating the sentiment, but it's there. I don't agree with that. I don't think the club was that much of a factor in society. But I do think that the club offered a venue for people of faith to come and discuss their convictions and their beliefs in a scholarly manner. How scholarly it was is going to be a big debate, that's for sure. And I think that that's important. I really do. The Socratic Club for 30 years welcomed religious argument as well as non-religious or atheistic counter-arguments for people who really wanted to pursue and discuss religion. I went well beyond my original pagination that I told the editor that when they accepted the book proposal of 230. It goes back and forth between 350 and 400 pages now. But I'm going to publish later after the book comes out as an article, or I'm going to even better find some young scholar who wants to publish the article and give them the material and my thoughts on it and just let them have at it. But a lot of the students who were involved in the club, they wanted a Christian venue. They wanted a place where they can be proud to be a Christian, could be heard as a Christian, could be recognized that Christian does have an academic character or is part of the, you know, greater personality of what it means to be a scholar. And so anyone out there that's interested in that type of thing, I already know a couple of you. You know, this is something to talk after the book comes out, because after the book comes out, I'm going to take a break from writing for a while and then go on to my next project.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that Premier Insight has been offered a new $5,000 matching grant that will double your gift today up to that amount. And right now, that's an incredible blessing, as there is a final funding gap of $94,000 that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June the 30th. This show depends fully on the generosity of friends like you. So I'm asking you to please give your very best gift right now to close this gap, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Jim, there were obviously moments in the Socratic Club where things got a little bit feisty. People sort of, there was a little bit of argy-bargy, is a word we use in English, in England, where people are sort of debating the issue in a way that's not so civil. But on the most part, the discussions, even though people had vehemently opposed opinions, they were discussing these things in a civilized manner. Why do you think civil discourse, like what we saw at the Socratic Club, is still so important today in an increasingly divided society?
Well, yeah, I've talked to a lot of people about the lack of civil discourse in America in particular. But it's global. You have these strong feelings between conservatives and liberals popping up all over the place. And what have we lost, and why isn't it more civil as it was? And I do believe that in the 1940s and 50s, not only at the Socratic Club, but you know, other clubs and other venues, it was more civil. I think one reason it was more civil then than today is people read a lot more back then. And not only did they read a lot more back then, they had radio for entertainment in the 40s and all the way up to the 60s. And radio in the 1940s and the 1950s was tightly controlled by BBC. And I guess what I'm saying is the mass media of their generation, it was demonstrative of civil discourse. So, you know, to get a good idea of what I'm talking about, let's go watch a show on PBS, especially one that's, you know, shot in, you know, Britain, or the one I like to point out to people. Let's take a look at the cops and how they're portrayed on BBC. And they're a lot more civil. They're, you know, come across about being a lot more less stressed, if you will, more relaxed in what they're doing. They don't get too upset if the, you know, kids at the, you know, in the projects give them a bunch of lip and that type of thing. And then you go and you look at the American cop and television in America, and our heroic figures are the ones who, I don't care about their civil rights, and they beat the living hell out of some, you know, somebody, and we're going, yeah, you got the bad guy. And so there's a difference of culture there. And I think there's a lot of good that comes out of our more cowboy and aggressive culture than the more reserved and culture that you find in Britain. I'm not saying it's all bad in the States. You know, we stand up and fight for what we believe in. And I think that's important. But it's portrayed differently. And if I had to say what was the main reason is people read back then. Joad's a great example. He was more, I point this out in the book, he was more famous in 1944 than Lewis was. Now, Stephanie Derrick, who wrote a book on Lewis's fame at that time, would probably disagree with me. But he was well known on public radio on a I forget the name of the show, but it was kind of like a quiz show where the experts answer questions that people sent into. And he wrote like over 60 books. And people, regular people who never went to the university, never went to college, they read his books. And you don't have that type of, and those other people like him, they read Lewis's books. We don't have that going on as much as we used to. But both in America back in the 40s through the 60s, as well as in the UK, there was a stronger sense of censorship too. So we have more freedom and liberty to choose what we want to read and listen to. And especially with all the, you know, podcasts like yours and other alternatives in media that we have, you can tune into almost exactly what you want to hear now. That remains to be seen if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I could go either way on that one too.
So what do you think we can learn from the way that they had these civil debates? What do you think we can learn from that in today's society in order to try and bring a little bit of peace into the divide that there clearly is?
I think what we need to learn in 2025 is how to be kind to one another. I think that's the most important thing. And not to be offended, I'm not going to say so easily, but not to be offended when someone has a completely different view than you do, and not to give in to tribalism. So, you know, if you're teaching at a high school, for example, and the parents come in and they're all upset about your kid reading Catch-22. This happened to my dad. They were worried that that book of Mice and Men was going to corrupt the youth. You know, you just don't shut them out because they have such what you consider to be, you know, an outrageous opinion, you know, of Mice and Men and Catch-22 are two of the greatest works of modern 20th century literature. And, you know, you need to sit down and go, okay, what is it that you are bothered about? Well, you know, and have that willingness to listen, to take that a step further. I think in the States in particular, we need to be more patient with the Christian audience that's out there in America. And especially if we want to be heard and part of the debate. And I believe that I'm an old liberal and union, fourth generation union man down the line. But I think if my party doesn't lend an ear to that side of the conversation, we're going to lose more elections. And so all I can say to my own colleagues out there, you know, trying to uphold a more liberal perspective is part of your liberal perspective is listening to the conservative audience. Don't have to agree with it. You just need to be patient and listen to it. That's all. And I think that's also very important for a lot of people in Lewis studies, less important for the folks in philosophy, I think. I mean, a lot of them would, you know, say to me right now, what the hell does that have to do with philosophy? You know, and that's good for them.
Jim, we're about to hear your paper from the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference. One of the things that you referenced that I just wanted clarification on before we listen to your paper is the Socratic conferences. We'll hear more about what happened at some of these in your paper, but what were the Socratic conferences and do we know how they came about?
Yes, Stella Allwinkle organized them. She wanted to take it was almost entirely women. She wanted to take members of the Socratic Club on a weekend retreat, which was a Christian retreat through and through. There was very little philosophy. There was music and there was conversations and a lot of talk about their faith. And it was about strengthening their faith during a troubling time, which the war was, you know, for so many of these young people at the university. They're losing people, you know, in their life, their, you know, family members and friends and from university are dying. She wanted to have something uplifting. And with, I think it was like 20 women and 2 men to the first Socratic conference in 1943 and the one in 1955. It was like 21 women and 3 men. That's not counting the men who spoke. And Lewis went to both of them. And you get to see a side of Lewis you don't really see very much of it in the rest of the club papers. And I think it's gonna be fresh material for a lot of Lewis biographers. And Lewis is openly talking about his joy of for the Christian faith. He's talking about his celebratory love of Christ. He's talking freely. He's talking to 20 young women. There was Albwinkle was there, and a couple of the wives were there. And so, you know, this idea that Lewis was afraid to talk to his female students just goes straight out the window. It's really interesting. And one talk in particular that Lewis gives on the church, you know, he has a lot of, you know, interesting points that he brings up. And I'm going to be cutting in the last revision I'm going to be cutting that back a bit. What I have are still Albwinkle's notes, and I transcribed those. And it's very hard to read through. I lose my reader by the, you know, halfway through the first page. And by the second page, I think a lot of people are going to give up. So I've got to magically find a way to tell the story, but not to assault my reader with this, you know, tedious transcription of Stella Allmanco's notes, which are, she was quite the note taker, but they're very, you know, choppy notes. They're not, you know, fluid notes. And you know, just refer them to the original documents, which are at the Wade Center, if they really want to get them. But those conferences, I think they were very important. And I also think they were very important to Lewis and Albwinkle for making it known to the Oxford community that the Socratic Club was a Christian society, as well as a, you know, speaker society that was interested in both faith and philosophy. Yeah, I think it was their way of putting, you know, their foot down and saying, you know, no, you know, we're a Christian society as well as a, you know, speaker society for, you know, scholarly work. And it works well. The club doesn't really start turning away from its Christian identity now that I really think about it. It maintains its Christian identity all the way up to the end in 72.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the program. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @PremierUnbelievableFE, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @PremierUnbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @Premier.Unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.